Welcome to Bad Wheel, a conversation about symbols, meaning, and practice. I'm Pintu, and with me is my co-host James. Welcome, James.
Hey, Pintu. Glad to be here.
Today, James, I did want to jump into what do we do here in this show? What is our... Where's the name come from, Bad Wheel? I do want to make sure that you and I have this conversation, let our audience know what it's about and what we're about.
Bad Wheel is a very, very simple metaphor. And this metaphor essentially is a proposed solution to a very particular problem. And so I'll kind of state the problem, the broad strokes, and then I think we can break it down. So our basic problem here is that the general cultural English American concept of Buddhist philosophy is life is suffering. This is a problem for people who get into studying Buddhism for multiple reasons, which we'll get into, because it's not a great explanation of what's known as the Four Noble Truths, and it's also not a particularly good translation. So to kind of step backwards, there's what's known as the Four Noble Truths, and life is suffering really only covers the very first noble truth.
And so what are the Four Noble Truths, or if you can at least give me the first noble truth so I can understand it better as well.
The traditional, if you Wikipedia the Four Noble Truths on Buddhism, and find again a very basic explanation. The first noble truth, either read something like life is suffering, or you'll read something like the truth of this word, dukkha, which we'll get into in a second. That's the first noble truth. So let's just stay at life is suffering for now.
For sure. Okay.
And then number two is the origin of suffering. Number three would be that there's an end or cessation to that suffering. And number four is that there's a path that leads to the cessation of that suffering. And again, in most places, you will see people use the Pali version of dukkha, which is the word that gets translated directly into suffering. And you'll most likely see in a lot of places, people will say right at the beginning, it's not a very direct one-to-one translation. But our problem is, you see life is suffering on t-shirts and posters. It's basically a brand. It's a fixed concept of what the general public thinks of as Buddhism. And even then we have a whole branch of, are we talking about, you know, different types of Buddhism? Are we talking about Buddhist philosophy? Are we talking about it as a religion? There's a whole broad concept there. But if you asked the average person walking down the street, they would probably say to you, oh yeah, you know, life is suffering. And then that's all they know. But that's their assumption, and they're operating day to day off of that assumption.
And just to be super clear, Bad Wheel, this podcast, we're having conversations about symbols, meaning, and practice. James is getting us into what are we about? Why the term Bad Wheel? But doesn't mean that we are about a Buddhist podcast. We will use and reference Buddhist terms, terminology, but we are not about being a Buddhist podcast about Buddhism as a religion at all, but rather we will take terms, terminologies, and some philosophy into consideration when we talk about symbols and the meaning in practice?
There's a lot of ground for us to cover, and we're using this as a jumping off point, because within that path, and we can get, we'll get into the full breakdown of part four in a minute. Part four is this idea of practice. And again, I want to revisit that, but not go there quite yet. And so now we're talking about that, those first two parts, right? Symbol and meaning, and we have this basic concept of translation in time, where we're talking right here, right now, and we're trying to relate to a concept that is thousands of years old. So one of the things that we can do, and we're being very meta with the idea right now, but we want to basically meditate with metaphors, and we're using this as this very beginning example, which leads us to, I think, the very first version of Bad Wheel in terms of where does this name come from. So let's, Pintu, throw ourselves all the way back into India. We're sitting by the side of a wherever.
Sure.
And yep. And I'm I've come on a time machine, and you can be Siddhartha. How are you explaining this first noble truth concept to me? What are the words you're using? What's the metaphor? What's the analogy?
Back in the day, in India, I might just, for the audience, I may pronounce it differently. So I apologize if it's
correctly.
Not how
he's saying. He says it more.
I will say it differently. That's all I'll say.
And I'll simply say that I will butcher pronunciations a lot. I'm even going to butcher English words, just FYI.
There's always, back in India, the ancient Aryans, they brought the Sanskrit language. And a part of this, there was always this understanding that, again, there's no technology. There are different ways of explaining good and bad, right? And the way that the Enlightened One explained this to a lot of people to help them understand what they mean is by taking an example of something as simple as a wheel, like an axle, that they would use, and they would always compare it to, hey, do you know this thing that happens when the wheel just doesn't turn for you? Like, you see how annoying and like painful it is because you have to get out of your horse or ox drawn vehicle, whatever it is that you're using to push whatever you need to, and you have to go fix that darn thing. So the terms back in the day were to signify good was sukh, and the term to use that we still use today to signify unhappiness would be dukkh. But they became unhappiness and happiness because in the days, the actual term of su and ka together would signify that this is a wheel that turns properly, and du and ka together, duk, would signify the wheel not turning properly. And so we just translated that much further down the line to say, well, duk is the term that we still use, even though the term, and in today's day and age, we don't signify that a bad axle wheel means duk today. So they took the terms from way back when, and they still want to apply it to today's terms, which it's not the same.
Well, and a lot of this is, I think we need to say it's natural to a certain degree, right? In terms of, this is just the course of history and language and interaction. And we can have a different conversation sometime later about Buddhism has a pretty fascinating history in terms of how it migrated from territory to territory, which is very different than, say, how Christianity moved So the short version is Buddhist Buddhism was very adaptive, which is one of the reasons why if you start studying it, you might find that there's very different schools that incorporate very different elements depending on where you are. You might get a Hindu flavored Buddhism. You know, Tibetan tantric Buddhism is very fun. The Book of the Dead is an interesting read in terms of it's a full psychedelic experience.
Interesting. Yeah, I haven't read that one.
I'll probably reference it further because, again, using this as a jumping off point in trying to get to this idea of relating to concepts or correlating to concepts that get translated is that we're trying to find this original feeling, this original spirit to what someone was talking about. And in terms of what the world was like back then and how people talk to each other, you know, you're going to use this, you know, hey, you know, like this thing, you know, like that thing over there, you know, what are you feeling right now? And I'm making gestures of angst or frustration or stress. I got a bad wheel in terms of that's our playful metaphor that we've decided to run with, is that the wheel's offset. It's unbalanced. It's frustrated. It's stressful. If I'm in a wagon and the road is bumpy and, you know, we don't have shocks. There's no shock absorbers back then. So you can kind of now feel this concept a little bit more. And that's part of what our goal is we're trying to get past these very, you know, explicit terms and trying to get to a more wordless understanding of a feeling that someone is trying to express. And so we get to this idea of, okay, well, dukkha equals suffering, but it's not really suffering. It's more of, let's say, frustration or stress. You know, again, something's unbalanced and it's something you feel, you know, you maybe feel it in your chest. Okay, that's half of our equation. The other half is life. And I kind of want to break down life now, because what are we talking about in terms of life? Are we talking about biological life? Are we talking about the narrative concept of life, of what it is to be a person? You know, what are we actually going for here? And one of the clues that we can do just in English for people who, you know, again, may have looked this stuff up before, may have read about it before, is they may see this term conditioned existence.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now we're starting to get a little bit somewhere in terms of, all right, conditioned existence is frustrating. Well, okay. Yeah, that makes sense, right? Where there's not this natural, I think part of what frustrates people or people hear about this phrase and why it's a problem is it's in English a downer. It's very explicit. You hear it and you're like, that's a bummer. What are we going to do about suffering? You can't. It's a part of life. And really,
but also, like, conditioned existence is also another way of taking a look at it, is some people feel stuck.
Yes, that's right. You know, so whether it's frustration, stress, a feeling of stuckness, we're trying to get to this dynamic idea of something. And, you know, the kind of full term would be dukkha is a part of conditioned existence. It is not all of conditioned right. existence, but it goes along with it. And the reason we kind of want to use this now as our path forward is we still have three more noble truths to get through. And if you get stuck on that first one, the next three don't make a lot of sense, or they're hard to justify. And so you'll see a lot of definitions, especially of number two.
Right.
Because, let's see, I believe the version I used was the origin of suffering or the origin of dukkha. You might see an explanation that gets us a little bit closer for number two, which is conditioned existence has a causal arising.
Arising, yep.
It arises from somewhere. So this origin,
yep,
right, that's it's causal. And now we can kind of think about, all right, well, what is conditioned existence? It's a little bit easier to think about that in terms of, you know, what is life? Because as we walk around our daily lives, what are we surrounded by? Billboards, posters, signage, stop signs, traffic. We have habitual systems that we're conditioned to. The language I'm speaking in right now is a form of conditioned existence.
Yep. Yep.
All of these things have been folded in to how we exist
today.
Today, yep. Every day. And this is the part that's, again, universal in terms of, hey, we're trying to relate to thousands of years ago when they didn't have iPhones and the internet.
Or the billboards or movies or whatever.
Yeah, streams of conscious media. But they did have this concept of frustration, this what it's like to be a person and this frustration on the stuff that's around you that feels artificial. Well, it's actually natural because it is artificial. A lot of it we made.
Mm-hmm.
So we know where conditioned existence comes from. It comes from you existing in an environment with stuff that's basically trying to condition you, especially this is the more of the today's world. You are straight up bombarded at almost at all times with stuff, information that people are, or just even ambiently, these are attempts to condition you into particular ways of thinking. Even our root problem, life is suffering, we can think about it as conceptual framing. This is something that once you accept it, you are inside those confines forever. And so, again, by trying to work through this metaphor a little bit more deeply, we can kind of break out, right, of this container. Right. And so we're almost there. We're getting through the box now. So yep. Because we still have Buddhism equals, which is like the kind of like the bigger box. And this is very root Buddhist philosophy it should be agnostic to all branches because this is kind of like the core fundamental. So let's get to number three. This one I think is really interesting because it's about the end. You see some people call it the end of suffering. I don't like that term either. Because it connotates a place. It connotates like an afterlife.
Also connotates, and this is where I want to make sure I reiterate, it connotates a place that you need to get to, a final destination, and then we get into the area of Buddhism being more of a religion and what you need to do to get there kind of thing. So that's my only, also agree. That's also a little bit of my pushback on the stopping of that suffering.
Right. And so if you want to escape these terms, we can have another conversation about reincarnation later, because there's a non-religious version of reincarnation that's actually very helpful to understanding Buddhism when you look at it as a philosophy in terms of how consciousness and ego development works. But we'll set that off to the side for now. And we'll go back to this idea of part three is, you'll also hear the word nirvana in English. Do you want to do the Sanskrit or Pali? It's like Nibbana. I'm bad at that one.
No, it's fine. I think everyone knows that term because of a 90s rock band.
Well, but that's actually a great point. Because again, that's an association. That's a relationship. That's a concept in a framing that we're trying to get out of because it's static. What we're really looking for here is something that's much more dynamic. We're looking for something where, what is the exit? What is the way to balance or fix your wheel? What is the way to basically not be so frustrated, not be so bothered by conditioned existence? Because here's a component that's, I think, very crucial in terms of what we accept here. So this idea of accepting life as suffering is problematic. Because again, what is life, right? But accepting that conditioned existence exists and has a causal arising, that's something we can accept because there is conditioned existence all around us.
Yeah, and because you're in a situation, you're in some kind of social box of some sort, right? Not physical box, right? But you live with a society of group of people, and you're going to have some level of conditioned existence.
It's unavoidable.
It's unavoidable. It's not possible. Otherwise, the only way it's unavoidable is you live in, I don't know, maybe if you live alone and you're still living somewhere, so you'll have a conditioned existence and experience there.
We can get into hermetism and, or being an ascetic or, and again, another time, another place. But these are all the things we can talk about on this show. The middle path, which people may have heard of, is trying to go, you don't want to go to extremes. More importantly, when we talk about this idea of what conditioned existence is and how it has root levels, I've mentioned it already, but we can also come back to our original statement of what we're about: symbols and meaning and practice. Language is conditioning. It is self-conditioning. It is self-framing. And language is actually built off of symbols, and symbols are based off of imagery. Part of this is what we have to take a moment to remember ourselves as just animals, in terms of, if you are in an environment, you are patterning it, you are mapping it, you automatically type things. There are a lot of just cognitive functions that are similar across all biological creatures. What makes us very particular and unique is we not only have spoken language, because, you know, squirrels, dolphins, etc., animals have ways of verbally communicating. We're the only creature that has gotten to the point where we've created sets of symbols as representations of things. I've drawn on the cave wall a picture of the tiger, and I've drawn a set of reeds and you know, made an arrow pointing to it and done a little Ghostbusters circle with a line through it cross out to try to tell you, don't go over here because you'll get eaten by a tiger. The stuff is imbued deeply into us, which is why, and it's kind of important if we want to quickly take a very quick aside, that in the historical version of Siddhartha, no matter which version you listen to in terms of, again, the origin story, the awakening doesn't occur until he's in his 40s.
Yeah,
middle or otherwise middle-aged, which, by the way, correlation, Dante's Divine Comedy, people might just know the first part, the Inferno, that begins as basically a midlife crisis. We have some mythological reference throughout time, which is that as we're born and we learn things, we don't have choice. We're just learning what's around us and we're incorporating it. And it's not until later that we're able to look back and reflect and realize that we might need to start unconditioning some of our conditioned existence.
Yes. And I think the other way of taking a look at conditioned existence, as you were stating earlier, is all beings, all creatures do this. I kind of take a look at it how human brains take a look at how do you make a shortcut to an understanding so that I can make it easier to communicate to others around me. So that's what becomes conditioned. And that way you use the same term, meaning the same thing almost all the time. And you run into problems when you actually, I've run into this as well, where you're trying to use a term with people from different parts of the globe and they don't know what that means. And you have to explain it in a term that does make sense to them.
You have expressions, idioms, regional language.
Yes, all of it.
One of the ones that you and I, as also middle-aged people, like to talk about is the history of the word stan, as used in today's culture, which comes from an Eminem song that younger generations might not be and sometimes often are not aware of.
Yeah, and they use the term to mean what he originally meant in that song. I mean, not like...
But without the irony.
Without the irony.
And right. So this gets into why we care about the symbol, meaning, and etymology of where terms and ideas come from, because language has this wonderful history where meaning can invert or it can be misinterpreted or change over time. I'm going to give two quick examples and then we need to get back and finish off our fourth part to the noble fourth truths.
Yeah.
Carl Sagan wrote Contact movie, fantastic movie. Talk to any film person about Contact and every single one of them will tell you about one particular shot in the movie, guaranteed. Now, one of the things that Carl Sagan wrote about was the history of the term flying saucer in terms of UFOs and how it was actually kind of a misquoted recollection in terms of it wasn't a description of form. It wasn't what something looked like. It was what something moved like, something quote unquote skipped like a flying saucer. The other one that's always fun is that Schrodinger's cat was originally meant sarcastically, and now everyone shares it as basically the opposite of, you know, oh no, this is Schrodinger's cat proves it. And you can kind of imagine Schrodinger ripping his hair out, being like, no, I meant it sarcastically. Anyway.
Or even now the Gen Z term of dead, right? Which in literal terms, you think it's dead, like a person has died. But what they're trying to say is I've died laughing out loud.
I mean, classically, you know, bad means right. Good.
Means good and good. Yeah,
and
exactly.
You know, it's also Michael Jackson album. Yes. All right, let's finish our story here. We started with life is suffering, and we've moved it into being. This is just a proposal for this analogy. Again, thinking in how the analogy feels is the most important part here, but we have to explain it. We still have to use language right to get there. So our new formulation, as we've been working through it, looks sort of like this. Number one, conditioned existence is frustrating. Or, again, stress is a part of conditioned existence. Whatever word you want to think of that relates to that feeling.
Yeah, the feeling of repetitiveness, the feeling of being stuck, the feeling of just... going through the motions, you know,
if you want to really imagine the wheel, you know, the axle version where it's actually grinding, you know, it's like maybe catching something. Okay. So that's number one.
Or the case of the Mondays.
Or the case of the Mondays, which is a great example. Because what's, again, the case of the Mondays is back to an expression, an idiom that has certain associations. It's a reference to a very particular something that not everyone will get. And it also indicates a level of acceptance, yes, right? Of just, this is how things are. But that's now we're at number two. This isn't how things just are. Conditioned existence has a causal arising. It didn't come from nowhere. The fact that someone has a case of the Mondays is a long form story of how we even got to that expression. Now, number three, because we know of our conditioned existence, we can cease to be frustrated by it. This, then, if we want to incorporate the word nirvana, is not, again, an end place in terms of it's not a static ever after. It's more of a dynamic place, because in order to not be frustrated by conditioned existence, it's going to actually require a lot of work, and it's going to require a lot of practice.
Right. And
the practice is to maintain our will. So number four is essentially the practice that helps you balance the wheel, this path, and that's going to be the Eightfold Path, which we can get into more fully later, unless you wanted to get into it now.
No, that's a good one. I think we want to wrap up. What does this really mean?
Okay, so
what is bad wheel really about, which you've defined?
So let's get into one last analogy then, in terms of this wheel concept, this one more metaphor. We've been mostly talking about a wheel in terms of something that's on our cart.
Yeah.
Let's take that wheel. Let's turn it on its side. Because what else did we have a couple thousand years ago?
We used a wheel and to create clay pots, to create, also to grind out a lot of our grain to make wheat. Again, back in old school India, sure.
But here's a great thing in terms of relating concepts from prehistory. No, it's not prehistory, it's still history. But, you know, ancient, it's not antiquity.
Older history.
Sorry, the word I'm looking for, everyone, is antiquity. On the Eastern side. Versus, again, we can correlate Western stuff later. More pressingly, is that I can go. I have a pottery studio down the street from my house. I can go and use. Essentially, it's modernized. You know, it's electric now, but I can use a potter's wheel. Put a piece of clay on it. Form a bowl, whatever you want. So that analogy, in terms of looking for something that transcends time and space, that analogy actually transcends a bit. And what's interesting about it is this one can work really well through all four noble truths. So let's think about, again, this idea of, you know, when we have a bad wheel, our potter's wheel is unbalanced. It's going to be really difficult to work with, right? We're going to have trouble making whatever we're trying to make. However, if our wheel is balanced, if we've been doing all of the work of the path, and then we imagine our, you know, sort of consciousness, again, our cognitive whole, our ego, whichever term you prefer, if we imagine that as the actual ball of clay itself.
Okay, yep.
So now when we place that ball of clay on the wheel, we can still work with it. We can still form it. And we can still shape it. And we can still create stuff with it. And then if we don't like it, we can fold it back together, reform it into a ball, repeat the process.
Try again. Yep.
If we're stuck on things, and part of further into Buddhism, we have the three sort of our three main causes of frustration are passion, aversion, and ignorance. Those concepts are related to conditioned existence. Again, stuff you get either stuck on, right? Like if I'm really passionate about something and I can't let go, mm-hmm. I'm now stuck on it. Imagine putting a weight on the edge of that wheel. That's kind of, you know, the idea in terms of being attached to something that's causing you frustration and friction is this attachment, this weight on the edge of your wheel is what's causing your wheel to be unbalanced. And because your wheel is unbalanced, now when you try to do anything else with your clay, it's now affecting that.
That's right. No, that's absolutely right. That's a good other analogy in the way that you can do it, because we still use, oddly enough, we still use a wheel to make clay and kind of make clay pots or whatever else we're doing.
And if we think about this from now, just this, what's the practice then? What's the path, and what can we get into? I think without going into the full eight, we can talk about, there's actually three sections to the full eight, and we can just kind of quickly go through them. First part will be known as wisdom. Second part is ethical living. And the third part is known as meditation in English. Let's go ahead and put ethical living to the side for a moment. That's speech, action, livelihood. We can mm-hmm. talk about those later. The wisdom part is, again, in English for everyone, a view and thought. And you have this term that you'd like to break as well, that you'll see in front of it. Right, you know, you'll see right thought, right view. Right is far too harsh, again, in terms of something being fixed as a translation to a concept that was much looser in its original language. And then the third part, meditation, is actually three different components. It's awareness, concentration, and diligence. So the practice of meditation is actually supposed to comprise all three of those components. Yep. And part of why we want to have this podcast and talk about some of these ideas moving forward, and again, clarify what makes us different, is when we talk about meditation, we want to talk about meditation covering all three of those concepts.
That's right. And making it a practice, right? And so I think the important part is, whether it's meditation, whether it's in the form of you sitting down, walking, or any kind of practice, right? So the practice of running every now and then, or the practice of something simple as doing the dishes every now and then.
That's a Thich Nhat Hanh reference.
Sorry,
that was that's a Thich Nhat Hanh reference for anyone interested in looking up Thich Nhat Hanh in terms of doing the dishes. The other one that's fun in terms of one of the practices that we were working on today, one of the meditations that we were working on today, is working through a metaphor, working through, you know, concepts and language, so we can get out of the framing that, you know, constricts us. And, you know, we do want to look for these terms, again, that we get stuck on, that then unbalance our wheel. And part of what we want to talk about in terms of a practice is, again, how to get unstuck. And the last one I kind of want to, you know, leave us with is revisiting life again, and right, thinking about how we can make cross references and correlations to break ourselves out. And again, reference something that's pop culture related. So we can kind of, like, you know, part of the way you can loosen an idea or a concept is to try to take a word and think about, it's called a metonym. We don't need to get into the linguistic stuff right now. But basically, anytime you have this A equals B scenario, take B away and cycle through different words. So life is, you know, whatever. And if you've ever seen Ted Lasso, there's a great character that runs around and he says it's in the opposite direction, but it works both ways. He says, football is life. Right. And so so try to think about this, you know, from a way of, you know, what does life mean? You know, what is life about? How can I break free from whatever my stuck concept is on life? We can think about how there's this really joyful character who loves something so much that it's football is life.
It's a good example. We can go through those as we continue on some of our other pods, but I love it. Thanks for having the conversation about what Bad Wheel is about, what we're about, where we're coming from, and more importantly, what we want to share with our audience and what problems we're trying to attempt to solve.
Thanks, Bintu. Talk to you soon.